This webcast is a service of South Dakota Public Broadcasting. More information at sd.net.
Together, and I was asked to be the prime on this. Do I need to start over?
Well, you were on the internet.
Okay. Anyway, it's an honor for me to carry this resolution because this is in our community, and it's a very historic facility in the city of Spearfish that has in the past been on the chopping block a couple times, so it's near and dear to that community, my community. And I'm not going to go through the whole thing. Obviously, everyone has read it, but I do want to hit on a few things just for the record. The D.C. Booth Historic National Fish Hatchery and Archives, established in 1896, has stocked waters in South Dakota, including Ellsworth Air Force Base and tribal waters on the Pine Ridge, Rosebud, the Cheyenne River, Standing Rock, and the Yankton Sioux Reservations. The D.C. Booth Historic National Fish Hatchery and Archive serves as a key economic contributor to the city of Spearfish, bringing in $2.1 million annually, or a return of $62 for every dollar invested. And the D.C. Booth is the city's top tourist attraction with over 160,000 visitors annually, with 840,000 being spent annually by non-resident visitors who attribute their visits to Spearfish and the Booth Hatchery. Also, whereas over 141,000 is brought in annually in local and state tax and fee revenue from the D.C. Booth Historic National Fish Hatchery and Archives. We want the legislator to support this, the continued operation of the National Historic Fish Hatchery and Spearfish. I would urge your support on this. It is important to the Spearfish community as well as the state of South Dakota. And with that, I'll stand by for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Is there any further proponents?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'll make this brief. Paul Lepisto, registered lobbyist for the South Dakota Division of the Isaac Walton League of America. We, too, urge your support on this resolution, not only for the historic nature of this facility, but for the importance of what it does for the people of South Dakota. As Senator Ewing says, it's a big visitor stop. That's important economic development, but also the economic development that comes through the sport of angling. This facility is wonderful for the fish that it stocks and providing people, resident and non-resident, the ability to go out and pursue the sport of angling, so we would urge your support.
Thank you for that. Is there any further proponent testimony? Any further proponent testimony? Seeing none, are there any opponent testimony? Any opponent testimony? With that, we'll move it back to the committee for any questions, discussion, or action. Senator Heiner.
Mr. Chair, question for the prime sponsor. Morning, Senator.
Good morning.
And I thought I had read this in there, but could you give me the date again when this fish hatchery was opened?
Mr. Chair, Senator Heinert, it is 1896.
1896. Follow-up. Do you have a specific amount or a specific number of fish that have been hatched at this hatchery since that date?
I do not. I'm sorry.
Well, one last follow-up. Are you aware of other important beings that were born in Spearfish, South Dakota?
Obviously, Mr. Booth.
Thank you.
Does that conclude your interrogation, sir?
I'll save the rest for comments.
Senator Ewing, all questions come through the chair.
I think you've lost control.
I have lost control. Any further questions? Seeing no further questions, we would entertain any further discussion and or action. Senator Heinert.
I move HCR 6021 do pass.
Second.
It's It's been moved by Senator Heinert, seconded by Senator Youngberg. Do pass recommendation on HCR 6021. Do you have any further comments?
Please. Well, I thank the good senator for bringing this. I can remember going down to the fish hatchery and looking at things and enjoying my time in Spearfish while I was there. I think they do great work. And I would also just say that being a child born in Spearfish, South Dakota, I know how important that community is. So.
Any further discussion? Seeing no further discussion, the secretary will call the roll.
Senators Blair is excused. Ewing?
Aye.
Klum?
Aye.
Otten?
Aye.
Soholt?
Aye.
Foster?
Aye.
Heinert?
Aye.
Youngberg?
Aye.
Kamak?
Aye.
The vote's unanimous.
The vote is unanimous. And the chair will certify there was no opposition, and with the recommendation of going on to the floor on the consent calendar. We will move on to HCR 6022, urging the State Trade Office and the Governor's Office of Economic Development to promote international business and trade on behalf of South Dakota exporters.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Representative Michael Saba from District 9, Hartford. And the concurrent resolution urging the State Trade Office of the Governor's Office of Economic Development to promote international business and trade on behalf of South Dakota exporters is, I think, a very important movement forward. Currently, we have we're doing about $1.1 billion annually of export business. Important to know is that about 70% of our state's economy is based on agriculture, and about 40% of that is export. However, when you look at the charts, you discover that South Dakota is 50th in international trade. North Dakota, by contrast, with much the same products, is 32nd. Even if you take the oil away, and not that much oil actually goes for international export, it's mostly domestically utilized. Even if you take that away, North Dakota would be about 35th. So Nebraska's 40th, Iowa's 38th. So our neighbors obviously are doing better in international trade than we are. But we are already very dependent on international trade. We can increase that and we can enhance it. In the Governor's Office of Economic Development, they have an international trade component. It's an office in Sioux Falls, but it's a one-person office. So what this resolution is urging is that we upgrade our efforts in international trade. And I think it's very important to know that when we talk about bringing new dollars into the state, truly new dollars, there's really two kinds of new dollars created in the United States. One is when they print more money, and that puts us in greater debt, $23 trillion, I believe, at the latest figure, something like that, with about $1 billion a day in interest. That is not a really good way to create new dollars. The other way is to bring in dollars from overseas. We have the largest international trade deficit that we've ever had. And we can do something about that right here in South Dakota. The rest of the world looks to this area as the breadbasket of the world, and our neighbors are proving that. We can be proving that, prove that even more, but we can also do it with other areas. For example, we have a company up in the edge of my district, up in Lyons, South Dakota, that is producing fire engines, and they provide now the entire fire engine inventory of the country of Saudi Arabia. They've done over $1 billion in fire engine business to Saudi Arabia alone in the last 10 years. That can be increased around the world. Most of these companies are already doing their own marketing, but there are encumberments that take place in the state. Transportation is a problem, getting our grain out, getting some of these international exports out. So basically this bill or this resolution just asks the Governor's Office of Economic Development and the state to increase their efforts in international trade. There are federal grants that are available that in the last 2 years we've not applied for. There's a STEP grant with the SBA. The last time we applied for that, it was, I think, 3 or 4 years ago. And in this current administration, we've not applied for that money. It's basically free money. And every state around us, 47 states got it last year. Two put in not so very good resolutions that failed, or proposals. One didn't even apply, and that was South Dakota. So I urge you to support this. It was overwhelmingly supported in the House yesterday or the day before, I believe. And I urge you to support this concurrent resolution 622 or 6022. And I stand by for questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for that. Is there any further proponent testimony? Any further proponent testimony? Seeing none, is there any opponent testimony? Any opponent testimony? With that, we'll bring it back to the committee. Is there any questions any member of the committee has? Is there any discussion or comments?
Action.
Is there any action?
Senator Mr. Chair, I would move 6022 do pass.
Been moved by Senator Heinert, seconded by Senator Klum, do pass on HCR 6022. You have any comments on that motion?
Briefly, Mr. Chair. I just appreciate the representative. I know he works tirelessly on these issues, and I thank him for bringing this forward.
Any further discussion or comments? The Chair would like to make a comment. This is really important stuff, and we've got some We have something to offer the rest of the world, and we just need to make greater efforts to make sure that that happens. And in a lot of cases, our products do end up going to other countries, but we're not taking advantage of that mid-step in between, and we might as well be accomplishing that here in the state of South Dakota. So thank you for bringing that. And with that, I will have the Secretary call the roll.
Senators Blair is excused. Ewing?
Aye.
Klum?
Aye.
Otten?
Aye.
Soholt?
Aye.
Foster?
Aye.
Heinert?
Aye.
Youngberg?
Excused.
Excused. Kamak?
Aye.
The vote's unanimous again.
The vote is unanimous, and the Chair certifies that there was no votes and no objections, and that will go to the floor on consent. With that, we will move on to our final piece of business. And that's the presentation of the 2019 Leopold Award winners, the Johnson Farms of Frankfort. Welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Angela Ehlers. I'm obviously not with the Johnson family.
Your mic isn't on.
I should know better than that. No, sorry. Okay, good morning. My name is Angela Ehlers. I am representing the South Dakota's conservation districts. Obviously, I'm not the Johnson family, but I will start the presentation off for you. You are receiving a handout that shows the past winners of the Leopold Conservation Award, including, of course, our esteemed chair. Congratulations again. And we have a short video. What we have for our presentation, we have a video of the Johnson family, and then we have Brian and Jamie Johnson in the audience. They will be up to speak with you and answer questions. And then we have a little trinket to share with you afterwards to remind you of this wonderful day. By the way, if you haven't had your opportunity to have breakfast on Ag Unity, it's still available over there. And we have meats from Steve Nelson with the wildlife. So please feel free to do that. With that, I would like to play the video. Is it? Why isn't it playing? Now it is.
This farm was started by my grandfather, John Johnson. He came from Sweden with his brothers. So this is a century farm. My father, he started farming with his...
Again, if you can get the sound up.
Computer up on the high.
This farm was started by my grandfather, John Johnson. He came from Sweden with his brothers. So this is a century farm. My father, he started farming with his dad. I started farming with my dad with no pressure. You know, you have to love it in order to do it. I did the same with Brian. I never really said anything. You know, he was part of the operation helping. And I wanted it to be his decision, you know, alone, that he wanted to farm. And it's been quite a blessing to have him come back.
I started after college in 2004. And now my wife and I have four kids. Ella's 12, Lila is 10, Leo is 7, and Evelyn will be 3 here shortly. And they are all active, helping various activities in the farm here, working cattle, checking cattle in the pasture, calving season, they really enjoy it. They like to ride along with me in the field, in the tractor, in the combine. It's definitely a family affair.
My favorite thing in the farm is cutting corn with Dad and Papa.
We have to feed the chickens. We have to go check the cows. We kind of have to decide who does the chicken chores because none of us really like going to pick eggs at like 5 o'clock.
I grew up in northeastern Nebraska on a cattle farm, on an Angus farm. And I swore to my dad I would never ever marry a farmer because it was such hard work. And I went to college and hated living in the city and met Brian. And I was like, oh, hey, there's a farmer. So I got myself back to the farm. And it's kind of been my goal and my passion to make a complete system out of this farm, bring those cattle back, you know, to the carrying capacity that the pastures can hold, utilize those rotational grazing wise as what they can hold. And then in the last couple years, we've really focused on integrating those cattle back onto the crop ground, spending less time and energy moving manure, already having it out on the fields.
We like save money by putting them on cover crops and putting them on that longer until it grazes a little shorter.
So it wasn't that I had to change a whole lot because the footprint had already been made. It was just tinkering with some new ideas and some new practices here and there.
One other thing that we have really honed in on in the last 5, 6, 7 years is focusing on really the acre-by-acre productivity of the farm and looking at, even if it's a small piece of ground, what's the best use for that acre? Is it corn? Is it soybeans? Is it small grain? Is it forage? Or is it really we need to put that into grass so we're reducing our erosion and we're providing some habitat for wildlife or whatever it is on those CRP acres?
It was mostly just managing the water. What can we do with our crop rotations in our management system to be able to handle the water and use it efficiently? Through the water issues that we encountered, it became more of a, okay, we have to change some of our cropland away from crop production into grass and water management, and that's where the CRP acres came into play.
That whole systems approach of having different things growing, whether it's in your pasture, whether it's in your crop ground, to keep the soil healthy, keep all those microbes happy and functioning healthy together. When you have a healthy soil, you have a healthy crop, you have a healthy livestock. It all comes back to you're producing healthy soil, you have a healthy end product. To us, that's really important.
They've seen an increase over the years of organic matter on their operation through the diversity of crop rotations, addition of cover crops to their rotations. And I also think, and especially with a year like we're experiencing now, they're starting to really see the benefits of improved infiltration in their soils.
The organic matter is building. They're keeping their fertilizer levels up there, so if somebody else down the road gets used this farm ground, I mean, it's going to be well taken care of and be the most productive it can be.
As you drive down the road coming in here, you can see some of the conservation practices they put in place. Saline areas, they planted back in the grass to recover those areas, see grass waterways, and they have been innovators in conservation in our area and soil health for a long time, and I think we learn more from them and they learn from us, but we really like working with them.
You know, on our operation, we do what we do because it works for us, and we think it's sustainable and it's the right thing to do. We weren't looking to receive awards for anything we do other than just because it works. We want to be able to pass it along and keep doing the right thing and learning as we go, making adjustments, improvements, more trees, more shelter belts, some cross fencing, just integrating the livestock more. It's a journey that we're on here in this operation. We've come a long way in 30-some years of no-till.
There's a lot more that we know that we need to do and that we can do.
And we're driving through the pasture in the Ranger, and my granddaughter reaches out and grabs a couple stems of grass. She goes, oh, crested wheat, brome grass, that's kind of neat. They take it to heart, too, you know, and they're proud of what we're doing here.
When you think of those moments where you're all together and you're working hard, and at the end of it, the little kid goes, wow, that went really fast and that was so much fun. Like, those moments are just like, oh, heartbeat moments of we're doing this right, we're doing the right thing. Or during harvest when we're all out in the field, Alan and Mickey and Brian and I and the kids, and it's, you know, someday it'll be the kids running the equipment, you know. Those are the moments where you're pulling in the corn or the wheat or the soybeans or you're baling hay and everybody's together. It's like, this is what we're doing this for, is to build a family, build these values to be passed on to the next generation.
Before I have the pleasure of introducing Brian and Jamie to you, I want to remind you, Senator, as you ask the pages, you ask them to give you a fun fact. I think they might have a fun fact about the legislature and you that relate to.
All right. Would you like to come up? Welcome.
Thank you. We're Brian and Jamie Johnson from Frankfort, South Dakota. We're the 2019 Leopold Conservation Award winners. We'd like to thank you for having us in this morning. It's a very big honor to culminate the year that we've had. And we'd also like to thank the Sand County Foundation, South Dakota Cattlemen's and South Dakota Grassland, and all the other sponsors of this award that have put this together, and all the past winners. It's a great honor to be included with those other operations.
We'll start with a fun fact. 16 years ago, we were both interns here. She was in the House, I was in the Senate.
She was up on the fourth floor. I was confined to appropriations. And just so happened in February, she started to show up a little more. About 5 months later, we were engaged. And
four kids later.
Yep, four kids later. So here we are. So, and we were all business when we were here, just so you know. Just a brief overview. Go ahead, you have a question.
I was going to say, if you were all business, you just weren't paying attention.
A little overview of our operation. Spink County, South Dakota, happens to be the home county of our page over there. Frankfort's about 10 miles west of Doland, where she's from. Our farm was settled in 1906. My great-grandfather came over from Sweden. We are near in the James River watershed. The waterway, the creek you saw in the video is Timber Creek. That was actually filmed in June of 19, which explains the extra water that you saw. It meets the James River about half a mile south of there, and it's still pretty full. We're very fortunate. My great-grandfather picked a great location with some great soil, but with that comes some challenges in the James River Valley. We've been able to manage that over the past 100-plus years. Unfortunately, my father built up an operation that can support us, and had the vision back in 1986 to start the no-till farming practice back when Dwayne Beck was still in the Redfield Research Farm before they moved him to central South Dakota. And so about a little more about our operation. We about 1,800 acres of cropland, 500 acres of grass. We grow wheat, oats, barley, corn, soybeans, cover crops, cattle. You saw the chickens, three cats, and four kids. It keeps us very busy. We do a lot of... when I came back from college from Brookings in 2004, I was tasked with doing a lot of the new technology in the farming, so I handle all the computers and the monitors and the prescriptions on our operation. My dad is just retiring, whatever that means in farming. He's still there driving truck when needed and checking cows. But
and doing chores so that yes. He can be here.
Yeah, he's home today and got the kids off to school this morning. Obviously, it's important when you in a family operation to continue to grow. And unfortunately, he has allowed us the opportunity to try new things. And with that come successes and failures. But you learn from those mistakes and you move on and you improve. And a lot of that has resulted in where we are today with the cover crops and the diversity and the rotation and the success that we've had putting the grasses back into the landscape where needed. Our watershed has some salinity issues in the James River Valley. I'm sure some of you are aware of that as you drive down 212 through that area. It can be a challenge. And we've been able to manage that through the CRP and other programs through NRCS and our conservation districts. They've been a valuable asset to us, and we cannot thank them enough. We would not be here and as successful as we are today without the assistance of our team and resources that we have available to us. One of the things that we've been doing here in last year, we've been asked to do some presentations, and so we've tried to relay one of the things I think has helped us, and that's managing it not just at the field level, but those acres within the fields, the lower productivity parcels in those fields that quite often are a revenue-losing option. You end up with $400 in the red on some of those very small pieces of your field. How can you manage those to increase your productivity on those operation and profitability? And what we've done is use grasses, forage crops and cover crops, cattle, and not necessarily just to get it back to a profit, but get it back to zero so that you're not losing money on those acres. And one of the things that I saw a few weeks ago, and we've incorporated in our presentation that we do, is a slide from the University of Minnesota, where if you reduce your cost by 5% and you increase your revenue by 5%, you can double and triple your net farm income. Now, you extrapolate that from a field to a farm operation. That's a drastic change in your profitability of your operation. Just a 5% swing on either side. Okay? And the light bulb didn't go off until I saw that. It was like, okay, that does make a lot of sense because you're eliminating a lot of your marginal acres, getting them back to zero. Your profitability goes up on your more productive acres. And I think that's a key for many of the operators here in South Dakota going forward is to find ways to manage your marginal acres and be more productive, be more profitable. It's not always about going out and buying more land, but it's about managing what you have
better.
So with that, anything more I need to add that I forgot?
Nope, I think you did a great job. Good job, honey. Questions?
We should touch on first, we were asking the other committee some of our community involvement, just to give you an overview. We'll let Jamie go first.
So between the two of us, we're quite busy in different spectrums. I'm a 4-H leader for Sphinx County. Of course, church board, teach CCD class at our church. I'm also a member of the South Dakota Soybean Association board, where I am the conservation chair for that committee. And I'm also on the Sphinx County Conservation Board. Oh, and the township treasurer. I'm going to put that one right here.
I'm also on the township board as a supervisor. I'm also a Sphinx County commissioner and a newly elected board member to the South Dakota Soil Health Coalition. So we're a little busy. We divide and conquer, I guess, when we have to, somebody's got to stay home with the kids once in a while.
Does any member of the committee have any questions? Senator Solhold.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, it's just really fun to see your success and your commitment to South Dakota and the land and raising your family and all of your community commitment. It's just fun. I mean, these are the stories that we just love to hear in the legislature. You talked about some of the challenges and the innovation and, you know, graduating from SDSU and what all the precision ag and investments that have been made, even by the legislature and working with grant dollars and development in the agriculture field. What kinds of things are you looking forward to in the future, like incorporating into your farm? I mean, it's one thing in the snow-till and everything that you've done to the soil and the conservation and everything, but what are you thinking about for next steps, and do you feel we have structures in South Dakota to help you get there?
I think it's scary to think where the technology can take us, because when I just came back home farming, we just started the auto steer. And nowadays you think of that's just a basic practice that's in your tractor. It's already installed by the manufacturer. And it's only been, you know, 15, 20 years. So I'm not sure exactly how far the sky's the limit on a lot of that. But what I'm looking at right now is some of the metrics that can be measured for soil health practices in the state. You know, is there a tangible dollar amount that they can show that it benefits an operation? Are those producers less of a risk insurance-wise and financially to their lender in the crop insurance? Then maybe there's a way that would be put into the program where those producers that can measure that would be able to have a lower interest rate on their loan or a lower risk on their insurance policy, stuff like that. But we're in the infancy stages of being able to measure that, you know, because it's still a fairly new concept to some people. And for us to be able to measure that accurately, there's some testing that has to go be taken care of. And there are institutions and organizations that are looking to do that, but it's going to take a little bit of time to get that technology and that thought where it's acceptable and it's backed up by data.
Any further questions by the committee?
Talk a little bit about your work with pollinators, because the
really like them. Angela just had a suggestion. I'll let my wife talk about that.
So something that we're doing on our farm is rehabilitating some shelter belts, because they're a monoculture of elm trees that really actually don't provide a lot of protection to our farmstead. And so we're taking half of it out and replanting diverse tree strips, and then we're leaving a section of that's closest to the road as a pollinator area. And then my plans are to plant apple trees in that first row within the pollinator strip, and just to bring more diversity into the yard and around those trees. And we also, I'm kind of a tree and flower nerd, and so I also do have a lot of pollinator plants in the yard. It was early in the season when they shot that video, so there wasn't a lot of flowers, weren't really blooming yet. That was one downside of the timing of that video, but that's something that we're also working on, you know, long term, maybe some bees. I don't know if I can get some kids interested in some of this stuff so I don't have to do all the work, because it's a lot of work. But that is something also that we're working on to create those little niche areas across the farm to I don't know, just add that diversity and help those populations out too.
Any further discussion or questions? Seeing none, I'd like to congratulate you for the Leopold Award and being a past recipient. One of the things I really enjoyed about it was the ability. It provides a platform for the folks that are in farming and ranching to get out there and show folks that we're the ones that care. So yes. It's a nice opportunity.
Yeah, I'd like to echo that. It's been an opportunity for us to get out and share our story and help others that may have questions about how to overcome a certain obstacle in their operation. The resources that we use, but the people that we've been able to meet and learn from ourselves and then take that back home and try it, we've been blessed. I mean, to be able to come back to the family farm is not something that everybody gets to do. And so it's truly a blessing to be able to do, what we love out in nature in South Dakota with our family and raise our kids in one of the best environments available to them. And if they so choose to come back someday, we'll figure that out. But it's a great place, and we're very blessed.
Thank you for that.
Thank you.
I think a round of applause would be appropriate.
And to finish this up, we have a gift for you. The pages will hand those out. But I also want to remind you that tomorrow is the deadline for the 2020 applications for the Leopold Award. If you're somewhat crazy and can get one done by then, we'd be happy to have it. But if you're in the middle of one, keep working on it. It does take a lot of work to put an application together. But I'd also point out then that means that 2021 applications, you can start working on those. And I encourage you, if you know of a wonderful producer like the Kamaks, the Johnsons, the Mortensons, the Dowds, we encourage you to apply. It's we'd like to see the applications, and we'd like to see more applications each year. Right, Jody?
Right.
Jody's in charge of the applications. I just get to tell you about them. So we thank you for the opportunity to present this, and thank you.
Thank you. One thing, and I want to make sure that we take time to thank the Ag Unity folks for the...
Duane gave me a good introduction. Unlike the other guys, maybe I require.
I thank him for that good introduction, also. and I do want to thank the annual breakfast that we have, and it's always very delicious. So we really appreciate that too. Thank you. With that, I believe this will be the final meeting of the Ag and Natural Resource Committee, the Senate Ag and Natural Resource Committee. I want to thank the committee for all of the hard work that you've put in, and we've accomplished a lot this year. We've covered I should have had the secretary run a total of how many pieces of legislation we've considered, but we've been busy this year. And so I appreciate your attention to business. And with that, we have one other piece of business. I want to recognize and thank our committee secretary and our staff for putting up with us and making us look good, even though we get out of line sometimes. So with that, Lois, thank you. And with that...
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Sohol.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I just wanted to extend our thanks to you for your steady hand as being chairman. You know, there's a lot of work that goes on behind the scenes to craft the agenda, to work with people that are bringing bills forward, to look at amendments that people are interested in, to bring parties that are on different sides of issues into negotiation together. And so know that while you run a great meeting, there's also so much work that goes on behind the scenes to be a chair, and just really appreciate all of your efforts on behalf of all of us. And also a thank you to our vice chair for the work that he does to step in when that's needed. These are extra above and beyond roles that are played in the legislature, and just want to congratulate you on a job well done.
And with that, we would entertain a motion for adjournment.
No more comments.
Oh, comments. Sorry, comments.
Mr. Chair, thank you for the comments. You know, and I do want to step a little bit off of what the good senator from Minnehaha County said. You know, this is my fourth year out here, and I've gotten to learn a lot of stuff. And I think I put it pretty simply to some of the other committee members when stuff gets sideways in this committee, you get the Senator Kamak sigh. And then he gets it straightened out. And I really appreciate your leadership over the last 4 years. You've been the chairman of this committee, and I've learned a lot from you. And so I would ask for an additional round of applause for Senator Kamak. So thank you.
Any other comments? Thank you for no other comments. I believe that Senator Klum moved to adjourn, and it's been seconded by Senator Youngberg as tradition. All those in favor, aye?
Aye.
We're adjourned.